This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
The Patriots cut Cam Newton as they get ready for the regular season, and the Red Sox with a road trip that may have saved their year, all while battling COVID. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks for joining us for the Press Pass. We'll start with the Patriots and then go in-depth on the Red Sox. The Red Sox and the Patriots, both with some COVID-related issues, although Bill Belichick dismissing Cam Newton's lack of a COVID vaccine for one of the reasons that he decided to cut Cam. In fact, not really offering any reasons in true Belichick fashion as to why he decided to cut Cam Newton. But certainly that was the news that resonated throughout the region this week, in addition to the Red Sox dealing with COVID positives seemingly on a day-in, day-out basis for a span of 5-6 days. But the Patriots news was one that really shocked. I think that there was an expectation on my part and many others that Bill Belichick, in saying that Cam Newton was going to be the starting quarterback, was saying that Cam Newton was going to be the starting quarterback. And now Mac Jones is going to be that guy, as the Patriots made the decision to not just start Mac, but to cut Cam. Maybe the marriage could not have worked. Maybe the Patriots saw that and that Cam would not have been a backup here. He's now saying he will be a backup in the NFL, but maybe it wouldn't have worked with the Patriots. But, you know, I feel that Mac Jones was the better quarterback in camp, but I felt that Cam showed improvement and had the ability to run this offense effectively and let the defense do its work, because I think this defense is going to be absolutely dominant. We're going to talk to Adrian Phillips about that in just a moment. But there was surprise on my part about the way that this went. And maybe Cam not being vaccinated, having to sit out for 5 days, Mac Jones' great job on that Wednesday in the joint practice with the Giants, maybe that's what sealed the deal. But I didn't feel like the Patriots had to go in this direction yet. I felt like they were going to give Cam a shot, that Cam was going to be able to run the team effectively, and apparently they thought different. Again, I thought that what the Patriots needed was just somebody who's going to be able to run this offense and allow the defense to win games, allow the running game to win games, allow the passing game to win games with these high-profile tight ends and receivers that came in, and for Cam just to run the offense. Now you're bringing in somebody who has more upside potential, but also is likely to make some mistakes. So, again, I guess in Bill we trust, and we'll see how this goes. But I didn't think that this is the way Belichick was going to go, and it didn't seem the way that he was laying out that it was going to go. All right, let's hear from Patriots defensive back Adrian Phillips, one of the leaders of this football team. Patriots' first game coming up on the 12th against the Miami Dolphins in Foxborough, 4:25 p.m., and I asked him a little bit about this defense.
Adrian, thanks so much. Hope all is well with you.
Yeah, no problem.
Just wanted to get your upshot on what it's been like working with this defense through training camp, and what has stood out to you about it the most. How would you go about describing the potential of this defense and who you guys could be?
I think the main thing that stands out to me is just the physicality of it. You know, that's what we focus on. Like, the easiest way to slow down a fast offense is just to be physical with them. You know, they can't run full speed when they're getting hit in the mouth. And that's one of the things that we've been focusing on this offseason, this training camp, was just being physical, being aggressive, attacking the ball, and just being smart players. And we've been doing that throughout training camp. You know, you have your good days and your bad days, but overall, like, I feel like this defense, opposed to last year, is just on another level. And guys are more confident because you have people who have been in the system. And even the young guys last year who were kind of maybe a little timid, maybe a little shy about their positioning, now they know exactly what they're doing and they're just playing a whole lot faster. So I think this defense is physical.
Is there a particular guy that sets that tone? Is it the D-line? Is it the linebacker? Is it a particular room that sets that tone, or is it just collective?
It's collective. It's collective. You know, you have your guys, especially like when you have like high back and you got smart players like KV and that. But overall, it's just from the front to the back, you can't have any weak leaks, and we don't have any. And it's just people are ready to play. You know what we did last year? We kind of had an underwhelming season, and you got that bad taste in your mouth, and you don't want that anymore. So it's like the defense is kind of putting it on their back.
Thanks, AP.
Yep.
All right, Adrian Phillips right there. Switch gears to the Red Sox, and I talked with Red Sox manager Alex Cora throughout the week in what was a really challenging week for Boston. It started on Friday in Cleveland when the Red Sox had their first positive case of COVID-19. It was Kike Hernandez. Then it ended up being 10 players and coaches, either COVID positive or close contacts, having to sit out, and the Red Sox trying to scrap together a bullpen and a roster that would allow for them to be competitive and win games. Not only did they do that, they went 4-3 on this road trip after Eduardo Rodriguez and Chris Sale stepped up. Garrett Richards, Garrett Whitlock out of the bullpen. Adam Ottavino, the pitching is what's going to drive this team down the stretch, and the starting pitching is really good right now. If the Red Sox go anywhere this year, they'll point to this road trip and how they responded in the light of all these COVID positives. Here is Alex Cora with me.
Alex, going 4-3 on this road trip, is this the proudest you've been of this group this year, given the adversity you faced?
I mean, there was a good vibe, you know, Chris was talking to the guys today, and, he's been saying all along, you know, nothing's going to stop us. And he's been very loud in the clubhouse, just letting them know it doesn't matter what's going on. We're going to keep pushing. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. And, when you have guys like that can, you know, speak up in the clubhouse, but then they go out there and they perform, it's a lot easier, right? And there was a lot of energy today. The guys were into it from the get-go, and to be able to do that, it's a testament to them. You know, as a group, they understand that teams go through stuff like that. It's not the first team that has had a COVID issue, but you know, there have been teams that went through this and then they took off, right? So hopefully these are taking off and we can play solid baseball all the way through September and get to October and play in October.
Can you describe what the last 5 days have been like for you, you know, personally, and trying to, you know, put a roster together and game plan and figure out? Describe it.
I think yesterday, you guys saw me after the game yesterday. That was very simple. But you know, then you get home and you turn on the TV and you watch and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, we got a wild card spot. It's one less day of the season. We're closer to the end of it, you know. So you try to put it as positive as possible, but it's not easy, because whenever you see Brad's number or Heim's number, they're not calling you to say hi, you know. I mean, or good morning, how was your night? So it seems like whenever Brad texts me or calls me, it's something negative, you know. And this is not the first. He was the same way in 18 and 19. So, I'm learning a lot. I think, you know, like I said, the group here, they do a tremendous job just trying to keep us healthy. You know, just we got to do what we got to do. But it's not easy. And it's been going through a league a lot. I just, like I said, the timing of this for us, It's not perfect, right? But at the same time, we have to fight. We have to grind. There's no quitting. You know, we still have a lead in a wild card, and tomorrow is September 1st, and September should be fun. It's not a grind. When you're fighting for a playoff spot, you get a chance to play in October. It should be fun. So, it's not. It hasn't been easy, but I try to focus on the positive when I get to a room, when I go to the house, and try to put everything in the past. But then the next day comes and you get this. So it's been up and down, to be honest with you, the last 5 days.
Is Kike doing any better? You'd mentioned he's...
He feels good. Sick. Yeah, he feels good. He FaceTimed me today with had a full uniform. He was actually wearing the gray top. He has his Oakleys and his hat running around the room. He's going nuts. You know, he's just so full of energy. He said that, I feel great. 2 days ago, I could, you know, I was ready to go 2 days ago. And I think if we can have a meeting inside with TVs, he actually prepared the offensive meeting today. Should be fun. Should be good. Looking forward to that. But I mean, he's hilarious, you know, and the fact that he cannot do too much, and he has his whole back there, and that's it. There's nothing he can do. He can't hit, can't throw, just watch games and try to stay, you know, positive with the whole situation.
Why do you think Garrett Whitlock has been able to impact winning the way he had this year? And is it rare to have, you know, a rookie, particularly a rookie reliever, come in and have the type of impact that he has had on a group? Is anybody comparable in your mind to what he's accomplished?
I don't recall a rookie that has impacted, you know, teams that I mean, maybe I'm forgetting, but Chris, when I saw this kid in spring training, I was impressed. I was very impressed, and for everything, you know. Actually, we were talking 2 days ago how perfect he is. It's just kind of like what Chris said yesterday, you know, like he struggles once and then boom, you know, he fixes right away. And he doesn't stop working, not only with Bushy and Watt, but also with the information department trying to see where he's at with his pitches. You know, he's great. He's great, you know, and he cares about winning. We took care of him early, but now it's a full go with him. Obviously, going multiple innings, you have to be smart about it. But I think it's just him, you know, and he's never taken anything for granted. He was actually, you know, like in spring training when it was obvious that he wasn't going to go back to New York. He kept working. He kept pushing. He kept doing the right things. And, you know, it's all him. And Instagram, too. We got to thank Instagram. Because if we don't see that bullpen that he threw, I think it was in January, we had no idea if he was, you know, healthy. So everybody put work on this from the scouting department to the front office, and now the coach is here, and he's awesome. He's awesome. You know, he's not a Rule 5 guy. He's a big leader, and I'm glad that people are talking about him. People are recognizing him, and he's making a huge impact for us.
You mentioned in the past that both Bogey and Rafi have not been kind of embraced across baseball and media as the superstar caliber players that they are, despite their numbers. Why do you think that is, particularly given that they're big market guys who've won championships, all-stars, etc.?
I really don't know. I do believe that obviously, like you said, they're in a big market, they're star players, they post numbers, but I do believe the way they do it is very simple, very quiet, right? You know, there's not much. It's not loud like others, you know, and it's not like they're out there marketing themselves. They just go out there and play, and there's no flow, like they call it or whatever they call it. There's no swag. They're just good. They post every day and they play good baseball. And maybe for that reason, people don't see them as often in highlight reels or you know, I don't know. It just, we live in an era that Instagram and Twitter, you know, it's very important for your brand, quote unquote, right? And I haven't seen Bogey post anything other than the Netherlands soccer team in a while, you know? And then with Rafi, it's just about his daughters, you know? That's the only thing he posts. Is not about him hitting homers or flipping the bat or playing, you know, with a flair. And maybe that's why. But I think the media, I think that's more for the fans, right? But for the media to not recognize, you know, greatness, that's for you guys to answer that one, not me. It just, you know, Rafi led the league in extra base hits 2 years ago. He has 30 homers and 95 RBIs, and people don't put him up there with the best young talent in the league. You know, they always talk about Fernando and Soto and Vladdy. I mean, this kid, he has a World Series ring already, and he impacted that World Series. In 17, he was probably the best hitter of that team in the playoffs. But, you know, hey, I like my third baseman. I love my shortstop. I love my third baseman, too. So I'll keep him like that, and we have fun with them. You know, they're great. For me, they're amazing, you know, and whoever is not talking about them is swinging and missing.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora right there. Sox and Indians today at Fenway Park. Tanner Houck could get the ball for Red Sox. I like watching this guy pitch, like talking to him as well. And you're going to hear that conversation coming up next. Here is Tanner Houck.
Joined by Red Sox starting pitcher Tanner Houck. And really, it's been a year that you've been in the big leagues. Obviously, a little bit back and forth with Worcester and some of the dynamics there. But what have been your biggest takeaways from what it takes to be a successful, you know, big league pitcher, host, you know, every 5 days and have success in your starts?
It truly does go back to stuff that, like, we've been taught since pretty much day one of pitching. It's get ahead early, throw strikes, and just, like, keep your fielders engaged. No one enjoys a game where you're going out there throwing ball after ball and the hitters get more comfortable. But if you're out there and you're constantly on the attack, you know, right at them, strike one, strike two, bam, like it gets them back on their heels and they get uncomfortable. So it's just doing the little things that it's kind of something you've been told your entire life, and you might get sick and tired of hearing it, but it's true. Like, that stuff really does pay off and help.
Each player in person obviously has expectations for how things are going to go, and very often, you know, your mentality can shift based upon what your expectations may be versus what the reality is. How, for you as a pitcher, when you expect to have success, you expect to go deep into games, and the reality has been a little bit different this year, not because of performance, but because of decisions that were made, how do you not, you know, play to the expectation game and stay kind of within yourself?
For me, looking at it from my point of view as a starting pitcher, I'm out there as long as our manager feels that, you know, like, to put us in the most comfortable position to bring into the bullpen. So for me, my expectation every time I go out there is obviously go 9, perfect game, whatever you want to say. But, you know, reality is a quick check on you as it is mentally and physically. If you're out there and you've kind of been struggling for 4 innings, 5 innings, you know, and he comes out and gets you, like, I understand that. It's a game, and yeah, I trust the guys in the bullpen. So, in reality, you got to also be able to hand the ball off and know that, all right, my teammates got my back. They always say, you know, pass the bat back whenever you're hitting, you know, like, get everyone involved, single after single, and just different stuff like that. As a pitcher, it's the same mentality. You know, after you get taken out, hey, go out there and do the same thing. Go on strike one. Go right at the guys. Quick outs. Boom. Here we go. So it's just about handing the ball off and trusting the guys behind you coming in the game.
You've been called the right-handed Chris Sale, and you've gotten the chance to hang around with the real Chris Sale here for the last couple weeks every single day. And to me, there's the impact that he has when he starts, but the impact that he has behind the scenes is just as significant in that, you know, he is so intense. He is focused. He has a passion, a conviction in his work. How has that affected you?
Having a guy like that around is the most valuable thing I would ever say to have in a clubhouse. For your guys that have been here for 4 or 5 years, for the guys that have been here like myself that have 10 appearances, 11 appearances, whatever it is, having a guy like that is truly amazing, because he's a leader on and off the field. It's a guy that you look up to, and you're right. Like, people don't see the behind the stuff. They, like, behind the scenes stuff. They don't see in the locker room. They don't see us traveling together. They don't see these little things where that has almost more of an impact on me as an individual than it does even talking about the baseball side of things and the mentality of it all. So having a guy like that is unbelievable.
What have been the lessons for you as, you know, this team has quote-unquote struggled after the All-Star break, playing around 500 ball after getting off to such a good start? And we know here that obviously fans demand excellence, you know, from this group. What have you been, you know, kind of watching, learning behind the scenes about how guys are reacting to adversity, or how you're going to react to, you know, adversity, or the mentality that exists amongst the fan base, etc., the outside forces when you take the mound? How have you, what have you taken? What have you kind of matured? How have you matured in that realm?
I understand that Boston fans are some of the best fans in all of sports, whether you're looking at, you know, baseball, football, hockey, basketball. They're truly some of the best, and they really do expect excellence every time we go out there. So to have that fan support is amazing, and to have those expectations, it does hold us to a higher standard of, hey, you got to show up and play every day. Like, that's what the fans expect. But honestly, that should be the mindset anyways. Like, everyone here has that mindset. We all want to go out there, and we all, you know, as a hitter, they all want to go 4-for-4 on the day, or they all want to go, or as a pitcher, we'd love to all go 6-7 shutty, hand the ball off, you know, no hitter, whatever. But for us, like, we're still human. We still make those mistakes every once in a while. But it's about how you bounce back, and this team's gone through a little bit of a skid right now, but I think them, like us as a team, like, we're coming together again even better than before, and I'm excited to see where it truly does lead us, because this is a team that plays with a lot of energy, and there's a lot of great personalities here that you see on a nightly basis.
Final thing is on mound presence, and watching you here at Fenway this season and, you know, last year as well, you have a ton of mound presence where you are an intimidating pitcher to stand in against. Obviously, the slider, when it runs in, it looks like it's coming at you at that speed, the speed that you throw out the sinker, everything about you has a significant mound presence. How is that a conscious thing for you, or is that just kind of who you are? Do you seek to, you know, intimidate the hitter and be, you know, difficult to hit against? I remember talking to Marcus Simeon, and he's like, that guy is nasty. He's a very difficult guy to hit against. You don't know what's going to come, and, you know, we'll try to do what we can, but it's difficult. Is that something that you want? Do you want to, you know, intimidate hitters? Do you want to pitch inside at times? Do you want to make them uncomfortable?
I think making hitters uncomfortable is part of the game that we've kind of lost, honestly. I think if you look back in time, I don't believe it should maybe ever get back to the era of where you got guys throwing 90 plus up and in, you know, at head level. I don't believe that's where the game should go again. But, like, I think pitching in is a very important thing in this game. It sets up your pitches away, but it just keeps the hitters uncomfortable. And if you can do that, I think that's partially winning the battle. But in terms of having that presence on the mound, I think that is a major key in my game. I think that is, like, the best part of my game, not because I sit there and I want to look like this, like, enormous beast of an animal out there or whatever, but it's just have that mentality of, like, look, I'm going at you with, like, my best stuff for however many pitches I'm in this game for, and I'm going at you. Like, I'm not going to back down. I'm not taking this pitch off. And having that presence sets the tone for the hitters and the guys that are playing the field. So having that tone and having that energy and that aura coming off you when you're walking the dugout or when you're walking out to the field, I think that's a major key to having success.
Tanner, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, I took my Red Sox starter Tanner Houckwright there. Starting pitching has been really important for the Sox over the last little bit. Eduardo Rodriguez with two quality starts, including 6-plus shutout innings in the victory over the Rays Thursday.
Yeah, Eduardo, what did it mean to you? Because the team obviously really needed you tonight and also in that Cleveland start to step up under difficult circumstances. What does it meant to you to kind of have that ace type of performance in these last two games?
I feel like the team needs you every time, man. I feel like the team needs you, no matter, like, if they have relievers or doesn't have, or everybody's good, you know what I mean? Every time you go up there, you got to think the team needs you to go 6, 7, or 8 innings all the time, you know? That's the way I've been thinking all the time, and that's the way I do, you know what I mean? I feel like no matter who you are, you got to go out there 6 or 7. That's every time you step on the mound, the team needs you.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. I feel that Red Sox third baseman Rafi Devers is vastly underrated, and I asked Rafi about that.
Rafi, your stats would indicate that you're one of the best young players in baseball at this point in time. Is there any frustration that you don't get the recognition perhaps across the media, MLB promotion, for the type of player you are? And we hear so much about Tatis and Vladdy, who are obviously great players, but that you're not mentioned in that echelon when your stats are comparable?
Eso no, no me siento mal. Como tú le dijiste, eso es un problema de usted, la media, de la MLB, si me quieren poner, o del equipo, de quien sea. No tengo que por qué frustrarme con eso. Solamente tengo que seguir haciendo mi trabajo, poner mis buenos números, que eso es lo que quiero hacer. No quiero que, si ustedes me quieren potear en algo, ustedes son la media, ustedes son, vamos a decir, la fuerza número uno del baseball y del mundo. Y si me quieren poner, que me pongan allá ustedes o allá quien me quiera poner.
Yeah, I don't feel bad at all. That's actually something that you guys need to worry about as the media. You know, you guys are the ones that put the postings in Major League Baseball, and they're the ones that put the rankings. I mean, you guys are kind of the one that have to worry about whether my name is on there or not. Not me. You know, I don't have any control over that. So
me pagan para jugar pelota, es el trabajo de ellos. Si me quieren poner, yo vengo aquí a disfrutar mi juego. No tengo que hacer una payasada o hacer algo para que me poten, sino a hacer mi trabajo. Si me quieren portear, ustedes la media lo hacen, si no, amén.
Yeah, I mean, I come here to do my job. I come here to play baseball and do the best that I can. You know, it's, again, that's you guys. That's the media. If you guys want to put things about me and post and put me in rankings, then that's fine, you can. But if not, I still got to come over here and do my job. I don't control that.
Also checked in with Chaim Bloom, as there's been so much confusion about the Red Sox COVID-19 circumstance, the vaccinated, the unvaccinated. You know, what do the vaccinated have to do versus the unvaccinated? A lot of this is going to play out in society as well. I talked with Red Sox Chief Baseball Officer Chaim Bloom about that. Chaim, the society is obviously grappling with the vaccinated versus unvaccinated aspect of returning to work and all those types of things. And I'm curious, as you look at how Major League Baseball has handled this, you know, should the vaccinated players be treated different in terms of how much time they miss? In other words, if they are sick, should they be able to return, you know, to the lineup because of the team because of how the vaccine is effective? In other words, do you feel that there's enough trust in the vaccine from a Major League Baseball type of perspective?
Major League Baseball has, I think, done their best to basically listen to the science on this. There are a lot of health experts involved, and they do, you know, talk to the clubs whenever something happens like this, where, you know, it's really about, you know, trying to, you know, let people, you know, perform and let people do what they're paid to do, as long as, you know, we're mitigating risk appropriately. You know, I think it's going to be individual. And obviously, if somebody is vaccinated, you know, they should pose lesser risk. They should, on average, get through the virus, you know, more quickly and, you know, more easily than somebody who's not. But that's not going to be true in every case. So I think it's still important to look case by case. And in our discussions with them, the way they've handled this with other clubs, the way they anticipate handling it with our guys, you know, the facts of each individual case are going to matter a lot. And I think they should.
I know you can't get into specific players, but obviously, you know, there's been reports of people who've been sick and are feeling better, but are stuck in certain places, right? And you would assume that they're ready to come back and play, but because of rules, they're not going to be able to. Is there any frustration in that the vaccine's not being trusted in that sense?
Well, a lot of it's a medical conversation. It isn't. It shouldn't just be up to how somebody feels. Obviously, we need to make sure that we're doing the appropriate thing in the opinion of experts, and that there's some science behind what we're doing. And like I said, in our conversations with baseball, that is a factor. And you know, the individual circumstances, to a point, do impact, you know, how they handle these cases.
This is the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan.